Welcome to the Georgia Guard Fence Post Podcast. I am Major Charles Emmons. This episode, we're talking about annual training. Now, annual training, or AT, varies for a lot of soldiers, airmen, State Defense Force volunteers, and others. In this instance, we're going to present some interviews and sounds from the 48th Infantry Brigade Combat Team's recent trip down to Fort Stewart, Georgia. Here's Major General Dwayne Wilson, the Adjutant General of the Georgia National Guard, to talk about the significance of annual training.
Annual training, from my perspective, is the one time a year that we focus all of our resources and all of our efforts on both individual and collective training. So it's probably the most important training event for any of our units. The Army National Guard here in Georgia has the largest mobilization and deployment load for the Army National Guard this year, just in the 48th Brigade, 2,200 soldiers deployed across four geographic combatant commands. So training is hugely important, both individual training and collective training at an annual training event, hugely important to prepare units for those missions when we know they're going to happen, but also to be prepared for missions that may come up when we're not ready for them on the domestic side. So if we're ready to execute our primary mission of fighting and winning when the nation needs us to do that, then we can always make adjustments to our formations and capabilities to support the governor or local communities when required as well.
We traveled down to the southern coastal area of our state to catch up with the soldiers of the 48th IBCT. Every year around this time, thousands of soldiers pack their bags and drive large convoys of vehicles and equipment to training areas in Fort Stewart. Fort Stewart is home of the 3rd Infantry Division and stretches across 280,000 acres and 6 counties. In fact, it's the largest Army installation east of the Mississippi River. The 48th Infantry Brigade Combat Team traditionally spends weeks in the field, sharpening their soldier skills and field craft, planning operations, and simulating combat scenarios as part of a 5-year training cycle that culminates in a deployment somewhere. And that is why this year is different. This time, soldiers from the Volunteer Brigade are already deployed around the world in locations like Kosovo and the U.S. Central Command Area of Responsibility. On a previous podcast, we had Colonel Jason Baker, commander of the 48th IBCT, discussing the uniqueness of the current deployment.
Because it is a lot different of a mobilization than the 48th has been used to normally. We've got all our soldiers going to one place, you know, the leadership's all together. But this time, it's significantly different. And so we're going to be decentralized. So what becomes really key for the success is the right leadership in positions, because everybody's not going to be attached to the brigade. Everybody's going to be under different chains of commands.
With units and leadership decentralized, the training plan and focus for annual training has been refined for a smaller contingent of soldiers.
Carry on.
Colonel Luke Gaspard is currently serving as the Rear Detachment Commander of the 48th IBCT. He laid out his priorities during a meeting with one of the infantry battalions.
I do want to talk about the priorities for this year to kind of hit on why this AT is short, right? Who knows what the three priorities for the brigade are while the Ford is deployed?
Support the Ford, sir.
Support the Ford, right? We're on the rear. How many of your command leadership above lieutenant are in this room? Probably none, right? So really the company commanders are forward, the battalion commander is forward, the majority of this formation is forward. So the best thing that we can do is to make sure that the soldiers forward have what they need. The second priority.
Maintenance, sir?
No, but I like where you're at. So training, we should be training our soldiers on individual tasks, right? Making sure you get to where? Schools? Whatever your training requirements are, this is the time to focus on yourself. Get right as a soldier, so that way when the Ford returns and we start putting the pieces back in place, you're not leaving to go to a school. All right, the third priority, everything that goes with getting everything back in order.
I caught up with Colonel Gaspard later when he was visiting soldiers of the 177th Brigade Engineer Battalion at one of their training ranges.
So two of the three battalions that were not forward deployed or staying in the field.
I also spoke with Lieutenant Colonel Craig Henderson, the commander of the Engineer Battalion, about how he's filling leadership gaps while many of his officers and non-commissioned officers are deployed.
We had to talk through it because we don't have many officers and most of our NCOs are gone. So we had to talk through like what risk are we willing to accept, and came to the conclusion like we got the guys who can do the individual tasks. And it's an opportunity with some of the senior NCOs and officers out of the way for the junior enlisted soldiers to build some depth.
Good afternoon, Jim. My name is Specialist Reese. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cover the absentee charge and how we set it up.
That was Specialist Reese giving a brief to a group of senior leaders, a job normally reserved for a senior non-commissioned officer.
That stump is still there, and it makes it a little bit more difficult for the enemy to move through. But for this particular application, we're going to simulate this being at 5 feet.
Find the hole!
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 Specialist Ryan Higley, a 177th Headquarters medic, talked about stepping up and passing on his knowledge from previous annual training.
So my first AT was XCTC, 30-day field problem, kind of pre-JRTC, pre-deployment sort of thing we're getting evaluated. So that one was obviously like high op tempo, a lot of work, a lot of moving parts. And then this year, we're kind of dealing with a lot of like understaffing as far as the medical section goes. We don't have a PA, we don't have a provider. We only have two NCOs. And then about five junior enlisted, one of which isn't MOSQ'd yet.
How are you guys handling that personnel shortage? Are a lot of junior soldiers stepping up into leader roles?
Actually, kind of me, they call me the quote-unquote senior specialist. So I've been spending a lot of time kind of coordinating with the other junior medics, kind of passing on the stuff that I've learned as much as I can, as best as I can.
What are the things you hope to pass on and see, come out of this AT for the junior soldiers as you train them?
I guess just a general improvement of our MOS skills, primarily sort of like, not necessarily clinical side, but I guess quote unquote clinical side, also like battalion aid station sick call sort of procedure, because AIT for medics, like 99% of it is combat trauma. Obviously, we're not in a combat setting right now. We're not seeing gunshot wounds. We're primarily seeing sprained ankles, abdominal pain, stuff like that. So kind of hoping that I can kind of pass on my knowledge as far as sick call procedure goes, kind of develop us, make us as good, well-rounded medics as we can be.
I'm getting a lot of training on a bunch of different things that I like haven't seen firsthand because it's different than like AIT training. And this is actual like real life training with people that have different injuries or like have different problems.
That's Private First Class Paulina Herrera, one of the junior soldiers learning from Specialist Higley's experience at annual training.
So I got a chance to see like different types of issues that people have, like back pain, shoulder pain, heat caps.
What is your civilian occupation?
I work for EMS Transport, and we transport dialysis and discharge patients.
How has like this training kind of augmented your civilian training and vice versa?
Well, this is my first like actual drill, so I've gotten a chance to improve on some places and learn more about how to take care of a person, how to take care of a patient, and how I can like help them if they're in like a life-threatening situation or something like that.
On the other side of Fort Stewart, culinary specialists from the 148th Brigade Support Battalion were up hours before breakfast was served to prepare meals for soldiers.
My job for annual training is to try, all of them are E4 and below, so by the time they leave here, they should be ready to be an NCO.
That was Sergeant First Class Ronnie Jackson, the non-commissioned officer in charge of the kitchen.
But my next two NCO candidates, it was like right there, and that's all I'm doing now. I'm back supervising. I'm letting them run it. They got problems, but that's it. That's all I do. I train cooks.
What is it you do on the civilian side?
I work at the United States Post Office, and I part-time at Bucky's doing food culinary service. I also own my own food truck on the civilian side. I've been in the military since 1995, active duty till now, and all I did is food service. So food service is my passion. I cook to relax and enjoy myself. So the Army just give me more opportunities to like open up doorways for places that I can't go. And once I retire, my goal is to be a culinary food service inspector, like at Fort Lee, Virginia, teaching the same cooks that I got now.
Specialist Dudley, so you're in charge here.
Yes, sir, I am.
That's interesting. So this isn't just, you know, food prep. This is kind of like a little leadership challenge as well during this annual training.
Yes, sir. He's checking to see if I can handle it on my own as a sergeant, because I'm trying to get promoted to become a sergeant. So he's just trying to make sure that I can do it on my own without his help.
So what are your responsibilities here then? What are you kind of checking him on and making sure of here today?
So first off, I have to make sure everybody's here on time, make sure they're in the right uniform, they prepping the food right. I got to make sure they do driver's training, ETS range, the gun range, because even though we cook, so we still have to do all that to qualify. So I have to make sure everything everywhere is all P's and Q's.
Y'all will be lane 6, 1 and 2, lane 6.
One of the main purposes for annual training was to requalify soldiers on their individual weapons, including the M4 carbine rifle. But even more important than that,
can you scan your CAT card for me? Hold
was processing soldiers through stations to update their medical, dental, and administrative records. This is known to most soldiers by its acronym, SRP, or Soldier Readiness Processing. Here's Captain Andrew Silva, a Georgia Army National Guard Headquarters personnel officer.
So a soldier walks through the door. What is ultimately the expectation and the goal for them when they move through SRP?
So the ultimate goal is to generate ready soldiers, ready deployable soldiers. So taking them from wherever they're at in their medical status or an administrative status to the point where, you know, we've identified whether they're deployable or not. And if it's something that we can fix it on site. We do that. So that includes things like dental, and medical readiness profiling and lifting profiles. It also includes correcting things administratively. So our ability to remain deployable is kind of our core function of the reserve component and our ability to maintain readiness for the state and nation. So it's really like the kind of the motto of the SRP is readiness starts here. And that's really kind of how we see it as they go through. The whole purpose of this entire endeavor here is to not just check any blocks, but that we're actually spending time and going through the various things that encompass a soldier's readiness. So, you know, dental readiness, medical readiness, your administrative, has your DD-93 been updated? Do we have your updated contact information? It's little things like that. But on the whole, you know, once we've completed the entire process, they've gone through what might have only taken, you know, at this point, 2, maybe 3 hours at most. But we've turned a soldier from what may have about to been not ready or was not deployable to the point where they're medically ready. Their dental is, you know, up to date. We've gotten all their administrative things for the most part corrected. You know, we're retaining soldiers, so they're coming through. Those that are in the window can re-enlist, can, you know, process their bonus right there on the spot. We've basically brought all the key people that we need to affect that readiness into one place.
The Georgia Army National Guard has refined the process over several years to make it as efficient as possible for soldiers.
Hey, so you're just finishing the SRP process. What was your opinion of the process, but how long did it take you?
It took me about 20 to 25 minutes, very efficient than usual. So I'm actually really pleased with it.
It took me about an hour and a half, and it was a pretty simple process as long as you know how to follow directions.
The site processes around 350 to 400 soldiers per day, and in total will process more than 4,400 from the Georgia Army National Guard.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the June 2024 Consolidated Battle Handoff Ceremony for the Georgia Army National Guard.
Midway through annual training, 165 new soldiers joined the ranks of the Georgia Army National Guard. 60 of them belonged to the 48th IBCT. They had just completed initial entry training and processing and were now ready to join their units immediately.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your June 2024 Georgia Recruit Sustainment Program graduates.
As of this recording, the 48th IBCT has completed their annual training and improved readiness, lethality, and deployability for soldiers in the brigade. Georgia National Guard-wide, many units continue to rotate through ranges and readiness centers or even overseas for annual training with our international partners. We want to thank you for joining us on the Georgia Guard Fence Post podcast, and we encourage you to check out some of our previous shows on any of your favorite podcast platforms. We look forward to bringing you our next edition later this year. Until then, the Georgia National Guard remains always ready, always there.